Welcome to These Lads on Mental. My name is Gary.
And I'm Neil, and our podcast is a lighthearted approach to normalise mental health. These Lads Are Mental recognises the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation as the custodians and traditional owners of Sydney. We pay respect to their ancestors and elders, past and present, and value their continuing connection to lands, living culture, and integral contribution to the bright and inclusive future of this beautiful city that we call home.
On today's episode, we have the amazing Hugo Turvey.
He is an army captain, a two-time cancer survivor, and a mental health advocate.
Hugo also is making some big impacts in the mental health world and the health world through his business, 25 Stay Alive.
But before we start today's show, please listen to our disclaimer. This show is just a group of opinions and is not to be treated as medical advice. If you are struggling with mental health, please speak to your physician or reach out to a service such as Lifeline. Thank you. We know that your story isn't quite like most people's. So before we get into that, we normally ask guests straight off the bat what their opinion is on their own mental health story. And let's say if we look at yourself before maybe you hit your 20s when things started to happen. Can you tell us like what your take was on mental health? Did you experience it up to that date?
Yeah, it's a good question. And to be honest, I didn't at the time before my health events, which we'll probably touch on. I didn't know really the ins and outs of mental health, or I couldn't differentiate, say, mental illness to mental health. And I never really understood it. And that was partly because, fortunately, I never really had a family history of it, which I'm grateful for. But also, I never really understood myself on if I was probably experiencing poor mental health. I never really dig deep enough to understand why that was. And it's not until what I've gone through now, what I know now, and when I'm chatting to my psychologist in our sessions about some childhood trauma that I never even explored, I find it fascinating because I look back at all this trauma that I went through as a child with my health and stuff that wasn't normal as a kid that I just kind of thought it was normal for me. And it's not until now unpacking it with him and understanding more about myself, about what mental health looks like, where I go, yep, I definitely had some signs and symptoms of mental illness even as a kid, but I never spoke about it because I had no reason to talk about it and I wasn't educated in knowing about it. So I think it's a great question and something I'm actually exploring now with my psychologist, interestingly enough.
It's interesting you mentioned childhood trauma. I think that's probably, I don't know if it's just because of the last several guests we've had, but that's something that's come up quite a lot, isn't it, Sully, in terms of childhood trauma?
Yeah, and you know, with Batir, the charity that we've had on already, they say I think 75% of mental health conditions manifest before you hit the age of 18. And when you're a child, as you were saying, you probably don't know in the moment what's really going on. I can certainly speak to that as well, where you're kind of, you get these feelings, you don't know what they are, but you kind of just carry on. And then it's only in later life that trauma kind of tends to arise. And then what's even worse is if you've had trauma as a child, it can kind of come after you, so to speak, when you're an adult. And then you can be put into a scenario, which actually happened to me about 4 years ago. And it was like zapping me back to like an 8-year-old child again. And if you don't resolve it, it just lingers there, you know? So credit to you for tackling that. I think trauma is one of those things that we, as a human race, don't give it enough gravitas, because you do need to resolve it. You did need to kind of unfortunately face it on sometimes and let it come true, which I know is not easy, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting because I think a lot of people probably have some sort of trauma, and it's not just, you know, people listening to it thinking the big stuff about, you know, whether it be physical trauma or things like that, you know, some mental trauma as a kid that can be, at the time you think insignificant, but looking back on it can be triggers for other parts of your adult life. I don't think people probably explore that enough. But yeah, I'm actually in a very weird way, enjoying exploring it with my psychologist, purely because I'm unpacking things that I've never really thought about before. So I think in a way for me, I feel like I'm learning a lot and things are making more sense to go. Maybe that's why I think certain ways. It could have stemmed from, you know, those incidences or that experiences in my childhood. So in a weird type of way, I'm enjoying going through that process because I know that hopefully there'll be good that comes from that as well.
So in terms of, obviously, you're obviously a huge health advocate, but obviously mental health, and then, which is amazing. That's one of the things that caught my attention when I was looking through, and I first contacted you, but then I read into your story. So I actually was more aware of what you're doing in the health space before I actually got into your story, which is really good. So it'd be great if you just shared your story, mate, because your story is pretty incredible, to be honest with you.
Yeah, no, thanks. And look, it's interesting because I'm an absolute mental health advocate, and obviously same with you guys. I've experienced that, you know, over the years, and I'm really passionate in that space, but that's not how my story started really. And it wasn't until after my sort of 8-year journey with cancer battles that it really started to manifest with my mental health and my mental illness. And it's something where I think men in general, or society in general, we can be very good at looking after our physical health. So something like cancer, and I can go in a second with the detail about what that looked like. But when you've got cancer, you do everything you can to treat that cancer. It's just, that's what everyone does. You go to your specialist, you know, for me, I had my chemotherapies and, you know, dozens of different surgeries and hospital stays and different specialists. And you've got this doctor that purely specializes in, you know, bowel related stuff. And you've got your urologist, which is more, you know, my testicular cancer side of things. So that exists. And there's, you know, medicines, I was on steroids, I was on immunotherapy, radiation, like all this stuff exists. But then amongst all of that, 95% all physical stuff, I hardly did anything at all for my mental health. I never really got asked the question how I was actually going with my mental health. I never said, would you like to go and get referred to a mental health therapist or a psychologist to talk about it, which makes sense at the time because I'm going through a hugely challenging, traumatic time in my life, yet no one really spoke to me about that. So it just seems so strange that there was so much emphasis on looking after my physical health and getting me better and cancer free, but nothing to do with my mental health. And I think over the course of the next 8 years, I just got so good at, it's like pushing it under the carpet, you know, not talking about my feelings, not, you know, managing my mental health. And it got to a stage where it did get really bad. And we often talk about, you know, prevention can make things so much easier. So yeah, I think looking back at that, my journey definitely started with the cancer side. And it wasn't until later on where I thought, you know, that the mental health side of things is so important, in ways potentially more important than what I went through. And some of those, the best way I explain it to people, some of those darker days I had, and, you know, it sounds like Neil, you know, you've experienced those and Gary through your work, but some of those darker days I had were almost like more painful or, you know, more confronting or, you know, whatever you want to call it, than when I was really crook, you know, losing 20, 30 kilos on my bloody deathbed in hospital with pain relief. Some of those darker days, my mental health, it was almost more challenging and painful than the physical stuff. And I think when you kind of explain it that way, people who have never experienced mental illness, severe depression, anxiety, kind of hear that and go, holy shit, I can kind of get an understanding for it. So yeah, that's kind of over the years since I was 21 with my first experience of cancer, fast forwarding now, last week I turned 30. It's really been a bit of an 8-9 year journey. And I say journey because it has been ups and downs with two different bouts of cancer, testicular cancer, bowel cancer, ongoing challenges to my mental health, you know, being in remission, getting cancer again, you know, relapsing and all this type of stuff. So it really has been a bit of a roller coaster ride. But I'm here today, turned 30 last week, and I'm cancer free, which is fantastic. So, you know, I've come a long way.
Great.
Amazing, mate. That's powerful. Obviously, cancer survivor, mate, even one time is unbelievable, mate. Two times is phenomenal. So delighted for you, mate. But that's pretty strong. You talk about health, mental health, but, mate, you must have a pretty strong mindset to get through that, mate. So credit to you.
Yeah, we've spoken about that before, Hugo, that the mental health pathway is just not there right now. You know, as you were saying, if you have cancer or you have a physical injury, it's almost ingrained in us what needs to be done to make us better. Whereas when you think about mental health, it's like kind of a zigzag pattern. Like no one really, there's no clear linear thing that you just know as a human, I need to do this. So I think in that sense, that's why it's important to have things like Movember podcasts, all this kind of stuff until we get to that place where we do have that structure. But thinking of your story over the last 8 or 9 years, like, can you tell us about how did it all start? Like, did you find something one day? Were you feeling unwell? Like, can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. So going right back, so I'm in the army. I've been in the army for the last 11 years. I'm still full-time in the army, which is great. I'm currently a captain. And going right back to when I joined the army, straight from school, just a young kid, you know, young kid straight from school, thrown to the deep end, naive, you know. I've never really had any experience of cancer or mental illness or anything like that in my family. So I was just a naive young bloke. Anyway, so I had about 6 months to go before I graduated. So it's about 4 years of training all up for officer training. I had 6 months to go. And at that stage, I'm 20 years of age. I'm the fittest I've ever been. I'm probably the healthiest I've ever been. I'm, you know, socializing on weekends with mates. I'm, you know, going to the gym. You know, I felt fantastic. So physically, I probably felt in my entire life the best I've ever felt. But then I had this little lump on my testicle and it was painless. It didn't hurt. It didn't impact my life, but I knew it was there. I knew it was there. And the best way I explain it, because it's for some reason we were not bloody frozen peas are, because we always seem to have them in the freezer. we never actually use them, but we just seem to always have them in there. But if you picture a little frozen pea, a hard frozen pea on your testicle, and that's what it was. It was a hard frozen pea little thing sitting on my testicle, and it didn't hurt. But I probably put it off for about 6 months plus, looking back on it, because what I would do, and I think a lot of men can do this, is I'd go on Google and search, you know, lump on testicle, you know, asking Google what it is. And then I'd find the most like least serious thing it would be. And it would say, oh, it's a benign cyst. It will go away on its own. Or, you know, it's this or it's that. Yes, you would see other things like cancer or whatever, but you'd kind of look at the non-serious thing. And I'd go, oh, well, clearly it's just a bit of a cyst or whatever. That will disappear on its own. I'm not going to go to a doctor for that. It's a waste of time. I don't want to waste the doctor's time. So I kind of put it off, just try to forget it was there. And it wasn't until June 18th, and I always remember that date because it was my dad's birthday. And I remember I was sitting in my army room and I called my dad to wish him happy birthday. And then on a completely unrelated side note, I felt embarrassed to tell him this. I said, look, Dad, this is kind of embarrassing. I don't really know who else to tell. I've got this little lump on my testicle. And he was just like, oh, yeah, like didn't think much of it. And he said, have you gone to the doctor? And I said, well, no. And he said, well, why not? I said, well, I'm not sure. Maybe I should. And the worst part is my doctor, my army GP, was probably 50 meters from my room. And you didn't have to book an appointment. You could just rock up, what they call sick parade, see the doctor. And it was just so easy. Yet even me, with that level of, I guess, accessibility, I still put it off. So like, geez, I thought, what hope does the average person have that doesn't have that access to the GP? Anyway, my dad said, go to the doctor. I did, pulled my Dax down, had a feel around. And even he said, mate, I can feel the lump. It's probably nothing. It's probably just a bloody cyst, but we'll send you off for an ultrasound. So even then you think, oh yeah, whatever. I'll go through the motions. This is all a bit embarrassing. I've just had a doctor bloody play with my nuts, but you think whatever. And then, got sent off, and then I get the call later that afternoon and they say, call me back in and said, mate, sorry to sort of say this to you and it might become a bit of a shock, but that little lump, it's actually testicular cancer. And I thought, geez, that doesn't sound good. What the fuck is cancer? Well, I knew cancer was when you see in the movies people bloody dying. So I thought, what the hell? I've never experienced cancer. And he said, look, we've already booked you in for surgery next week. You have to have your testicle removed. We're not sure how much it's spread yet. We've got a CT scan, you know, the next couple of days. So it was all this whirlwind stuff. And look, unfortunately, me putting that little pea-sized bloody lump off for 6 months, it did mean the cancer spread. And that was the thing I always look back on as like with that bit of that frustration to think, fuck me, if I just went to that doctor earlier, I would have avoided years of bloody treatment and pain. And because it did spread, and it spread to my lymph nodes, my liver, my lung, chest area, and it just spreads upwards. And then it becomes a lot more serious. And that's when I had to have the surgery, you know, follow-on scans, you know, the chemotherapy, the massive surgeries after that. And it was just a big 2-year process from me putting that bloody lump off if I'd just gone to the doctor even a few months earlier, it could have been the difference. But that's kind of how my first sort of testicular cancer part one went. And then there was the part two, which was a few years later when I had some other issues going on. And that was another separate story in itself.
Wow. Fair play. It's mad to think, yeah. Like, I mean, everyone's the same. Like, they probably have something that's going on that we just don't. What is it about us that does that? It's so annoying, isn't it? Like, we all do it. You know, you always get a little niggle and you go, I'm not going to go check it out. So I think, like, it was good on you for going. You know, eventually, if you had left it longer, you know, it could have been a different scenario. So, and what did that feel like when you knew that, you know, your life was going down a different path? I mean, did it hit you straight away, or did you take your time to kind of settle in? Or,
well, to be honest, the hardest part was because it already spread, and this sounds weird for probably even listening to this, but that was in about June, July when I found out it spread. That was probably July, and they said, yeah, look, mate, we need to have some pretty intensive chemo. You're going to lose all your hair. You're going to be pretty crook. We might need some follow-up surgeries. But I didn't actually do that for about 4 or 5 months, because what it meant, I could graduate as a young officer in the Australian Army that I'd spent the last 4 years working towards. So it meant I could still graduate at no detriment to my health. But now the strange part here, or the challenging part here, if you can try picture this, is that I almost had to forget. So I had my testicle removed. That was all fine. Recovery was pretty easy with that. But then it's kind of like I then had to put my army hat back on, almost forget that I had this cancer. And I didn't even really tell anybody because I didn't want to really have, that kind of people looking at me as that sick cancer guy and being treated differently. You know, I'd worked so hard where I was in that army training that I wanted to graduate and finish off my own merit, not like the old sympathy card and people feeling sorry for me. But it was kind of strange because we'd do a big field exercise or you'd do PT and I still felt fine. I still felt normal. I was still fit. I was still healthy from the outside, but I had cancer all through my body. And I think that was the hard part, is that I'd still go out to a pub and have some drinks, or, you know, I'd go to bed at night, but then as soon as I'd start thinking about it would keep me up. My anxiety levels were through the roof. And that was hard because it's like imagine doing this podcast right now, listening to this podcast while you're driving your car and you know you've got cancer all through your body, but you just have to pretend it's not there, crack on with your next few months, graduate as a young lieutenant in the Australian Army. And there's a photo of me with my sword, my twin brother, I've just graduated. And then 6 days later, they're like, boom, let's get straight to the chemotherapy. And brother shaved my head in hospital for about, 4 months, going through different cycles of chemo. So that was the challenging part, I think, mentally, to try and navigate that.
And is that when you told work, like the army, that you had it after you got graduated?
Well, no. So the army knew that, like when I say that the army knew that I had this or what was going on, and they were supportive of that. But as far as my mates, both my army mates, and my old buddy civilian mates, no one really knew on that end. So it was just the army doctors and chain of command that knew, and they were supportive of it. But, yeah, it was hard in the fact that you've just graduated, you're 21 at that stage. All my mates are getting posted around Australia to embark on a long military career. And then 6 days later, like I said, I'm in a hospital, with a chemo drip into my arm and cracking on with chemo and the side effects and losing all your hair and feeling pretty crook. So I think that was the start of I knew it was going to be a pretty rough ride from then on.
And then you obviously, you battled through that successfully, and then you had the issues with the bill. So what was the time frame difference there?
So 21 chemos, then I had a follow-up surgery to remove my lymph nodes and went on from there, and then had a couple of little hiccups throughout. But ultimately, it was just those little small boxes I kept ticking, and then it was the 3 month clear scan, 6 month clear scan, you're cancer free, your 12 month clear scan. And then you started to feel better and physically stronger and mentally stronger. And I got promoted to a captain in 2017. I got posted to Brisbane in 2018. Life was looking normal again. And it was like, I was that proud testicular cancer survivor. You know, I felt proud of what I had gone through. I shared my story. That's when I started to get involved in, you know, charities such as Movember. And it was June 2018 where I got my 5-year all clear scan. So, you know, for those who have been impacted by cancer, either directly or indirectly, typically a lot of cancer survivors strive towards that 5-year mark because essentially it means you're in complete remission and the chance of a relapse is almost non-existent. So as soon as you hit that 5-year mark, I remember leaving those rooms, had the CT scan, the doctor said, mate, all looks fantastic, happy days. I don't even really need to see you again. And you go, holy shit, how good is this? And so that was June 2018 where, you know, I was 26 and I felt, the way I explained it, I just felt kind of like free in a way. I felt like the whole routines and doctor's appointments and having to live to a schedule didn't define me anymore. And I felt like I was no longer, you know, that cancer guy. I was kind of that normal 26-year-old who had been through a bit of a journey, but here I am. And I felt free. I was happy. You know, I was living a pretty good life at that stage. But then, you know, that's when like life can, you know, throw some very unexpected bloody hurdles. And only a couple months after that moment, it was August 2018, I was 26. I started experiencing some bowel complications. And when I say bowel complications, I'm talking nothing more than some inconsistent bowel movements, you know, bit of stomach cramps. And I've always had a bit of like IBS and, you know, bit of irritable bowel, but nothing really serious. But for me, this was like, I always say to people, you know you're normal. My normal was always a bit inconsistent, but for me, even this was outside of my normal. And so I'm kind of in there in the bathroom, increased bowel movements. And I remember saying to my partner, this isn't right. Like something is not right. But I can tell you right now, that young 21, naive-year-old Hugo, that naive Hugo who put off that little lump on my testicle, if I hadn't gone through that whole process, and I said before how frustrated I was not going to the doctor earlier, there is no way in hell I would have gone off to the doctor with these bowel movements. No way in hell. I would have been a 26-year-old bloke who thought I had too many beers on the weekend. I just would have put up with it. You know, there was no reason for it. But I remember saying to my partner, I want to go see my doctor. I then saw a gastroenterologist. And I remember I said, look, can I have a colonoscopy? I just don't feel right. And he even said, look, you're pretty young. You probably don't need a colonoscopy, but with your history, I get it. And we'll happily organize one for you. And so I went for a colonoscopy day procedure, camera up the bum for those who haven't had one. It's pretty simple, 15 minutes. You know, you sit back after you're a bit dazed, you eat your little bloody biscuit or whatever you're doing. And the doctor,
awake?
Yeah, you're kind of half awake, but I remember it's just such a simple procedure. And the doctor just goes, mate, look, no issues. There's a couple of little nasty polyps, but we'll see you in 2 weeks. And at this stage, nothing sinister crossed my mind. I thought at worst, I might have some bloody, you know, inflammation in my bowel and they'd give me some medication or something. And I remember going to work the next day, dressed in my army uniform, typing away at my desk. And I got a call from the receptionist and she said, Hugo, the results came back from the biopsy. Terry, who was the gastroenterologist, needs to see you. And I remember pulling my phone out and said, yep, I'm booked in to see him in 2 weeks. Are we still on for that appointment? And she said, no, he needs to see you this afternoon. Oh, and I thought, fuck, like,
yeah,
you know, specialists are hard people to get into at the best of times. And here's a specialist who's literally requesting to see you that afternoon. And that's when we've all had it, that sinking feeling in your stomach where you just know something's not quite right. That's where I just thought this, fuck, like my stomach literally just like turned inside. And I went to the appointment with my partner. She had just finished work. And I remember sitting in the waiting room, still in my army uniform and just feeling sick, you know, where you just feel like just crook. And I was just like trying to read a magazine and pretend that it was fine. But as soon as he pulled me into his rooms and you could just see his face and I'm like, oh shit. And that's when he just turned the computer screen around and he tried to explain it with the most simplistic way he could. But he more or less just turned out and said, Hugo, I'm sorry to say, but that those polyps, unfortunately, you've got bowel cancer. And look, we got to act quick. It's a pretty serious cancer to get. And that's when I'm sitting there at 26, 3 months after I'd just been given my 5-year clear scan for testicular cancer. It was an entirely new cancer. It wasn't like a relapse from the testicular. It's a whole new cancer. That's when I that's when it kind of hit me. That's when I sat there and I knew I was in for a pretty rough ride. And that was kind of probably the main start of my mental health challenges as well. And from then on, it was a difficult time.
And from that moment that you said you felt that, you know, something wasn't right, so you going and seeing someone, what time are we talking about there? Is that a number of days or weeks?
So it was about 2 weeks. It was about 2 weeks. And that's actually the medical advice that I've been given. And so I can confidently pass that on. They say, when I say to learn your normal, if you're feeling anything that's not your normal for more than 2 weeks. So what they mean by that is if it's a couple of days of a bit of an upset stomach, well, typically that could be a whole range of different things. You could have had some bloody, you know, a bad prawn, who the hell knows. But if it's more than 2 weeks, that's when you should go off and just book an appointment with your GP. So whether that's a nasty looking rash on your arm that doesn't go away for 2 weeks, whether it's your bowels playing up for more than 2 weeks, whether it's prolonged headaches for 2 weeks, whatever that might be, that's generally a pretty good indication to go off and see a doctor. So for me, bowels are playing up, not right. 2 weeks or so had passed and I thought, you know what, I'm going to book in to see my doctor. And the most powerful part of the entire story in my entire, this whole probably podcast episode, was when the doctor said to me, look, mate, the only silver lining, he said, the only silver lining is that testicular cancer essentially saved your life. And what he means by that is because, as I just briefly touched on, there is no way as a young 26-year-old male, I would have rushed off to a doctor with some, you know, inconsistent bowel movements and my bowel playing up if it wasn't for me going through that whole testicular cancer, you know, the importance of going to a doctor, putting off that little lump of my testicle. So I look back at that and I'm here today in a way because of my testicular cancer. If I didn't ever had testicular cancer, I just had bowel cancer, there's every chance I would have caught it late. And bowel cancer is the second biggest cancer killer behind lung cancer. You know, we're having a different conversation, or I dare say I'm not even here today. So that's the only silver lining in my entire story. And it's why I'm so passionate about early detection, because it quite literally saved my life. And whether we talk about early detection or prevention for cancer or mental illness, it can quite literally save thousands of lives. So yeah, I'm pretty grateful for that.
It's eye-opening, but it's a wee bit scary as well, think about it, man.
Yeah, all I think is well done, like for following up so quickly on that one. Like, I mean, yeah, you like saved your life, and you know, you should be very proud of that.
No, thanks. And I probably should just say though, like, for the X amount of people listening to this right now, it's not designed to scare people, because it still is very unlikely that someone my age is going to say get a couple bouts of cancer and go through that So I do say that as a bit as a caveat, like, don't hear this and you think, oh shit, I've had some bloody diarrhea the last few days, I've got bowel cancer, because it's very unlikely that you will. But all I want for people to do, and men listening to this especially, is just put them in that mindset. Put them in the mindset to go, okay, I'm not invincible. I'm not bulletproof. My health can be pretty fragile. Here's this random guy who's gone through to the extreme of it. But hey, if a few things are going wrong, or hey, when was it last I had an annual checkup with my GP? Well, shit, it's been bloody 6 years. Maybe that's a good start to just book in to see my GP. They're just the conversations I like having, not to necessarily scare people that they're going to, you know, all have cancer. So
that's one of the things I always joke about. My dad always says when he goes to the doctor, he says in the UK, if you get your car checked, it's called an MOT, like someone get a service, etc. Here. And my dad always just says, I'm going for my MOT with the doctor, basically. And I'm like, that's such a simple way of looking at it. Because when you've got a car, you go and check the service, you'll get a mechanical, have a look over, make sure it's good. Because God forbid, you can't get to work tomorrow. Yes, but sure. Why check your health? I mean, what's the point in that? It's just like, it's insane to think how infrequently you just go for what's the point going to the doctors? I only got a doctor's appointment on me.
Like I have an even crazier story. So Sue, my wife, her grandfather, he died, you know, but he was elderly, but he fell over in his house. She told me, this is a mad story. He fell over and was on the ground, and he didn't want to, his thing was he didn't want to upset like the hospitals by making a fuss about him falling over. So he laid on the ground, I think, for almost 24 hours before he actually called them. And then he went to hospital, and because he'd left it so long, he eventually passed away. And that was just his pride for not trying to disturb like the hospital that he didn't want to call. And, you know, it's just kind of, why do we do these type of things? I had a cyst on my back for when I first came to Australia for 9 years. And then I was eventually like, I'm just going to go and get this checked out. I went down to Bondi Doctors, absolute legend of a doctor. He was like, yeah, it's a benign cyst. I went back the next day. He cut it out in half an hour and it was gone. And I was carrying that, like, you know, that was on my back for 9 years. And I just didn't get around to checking that out. Like, so it's just mental why we don't do these things. And we just think, I'll be fine. You know, it was like, even when I was younger, you know, going out, you were just saying, Gary, where you were single. And then, you know, you should probably get the old STI checks, and you'd always put it off for years. And then you'd go and get it, and then you'd be waiting on that call, and then you'd get the call, and then you'd go out on the piss that night, almost like to celebrate it. You'd be like, fuck, you know, I gotta get out there.
Dodge the bullet.
But you're right. I think it's that sense of embarrassment, a mix of the embarrassment slash almost like the what people still deem as like bragging of, you know, oh, I haven't seen a doctor in 20 years, or, you know, I'm fine. And I think we talk about, and our pre-chat about Aussies, I think Aussies can also be bad for that as well. The whole, like, she'll be right, like the old Aussie farmer who, buddy, you know, cracks on. They've always been taught to sort their own shit out, not talk about their feelings and, bloody, you know, seek help. And I think there lies a big fundamental issue. But I probably, the thing that I'm most passionate about at the moment and something I'm really trying to push is, yeah, the awareness side, of course, you know, raising the awareness, get blokes to feel their nuts around November time, you know, mental health stuff, you know, all important, absolutely awareness. But probably the number one thing that's at the top at the moment for me is that whole encouraging young men to build a relationship with their GP and to have annual checkups. And you touched on it beautifully, Gary, about the car service, getting in that mindset of having annual checkups, even if you feel healthy, fit, you know, perfectly fine, getting the mindset to have annual checkups, because there's two reasons for it. One, you might discover something out of nowhere, and guess what? Well, now you're in that most early possible stage you can. Or the second part is, if you have that mindset and you have those annual checkups, if you build that good habit, then later on in life, if something does ever pop up and you do have that weird looking mole, or, you know, something's not quite right, you feel so confident in your ability to quickly go off and book an appointment to your GP, and it's not going to be foreign to you. So I think that's going to come a long way in saving lives. I think GPs, especially, underestimated. People don't realize that you can see a GP for mental health plans. They can be the gateway to seeing, you know, mental health professional support. They can do a whole range of things with your GP. But like Neil just touched on, the brilliant doctor at Bondi, also appreciate that not all GPs are the same. And I think it's finding a GP right for you. And I'm doing a lot in the space at the moment to try and make more men-friendly and male-friendly GP practices and GPs who specifically, you know, can support men and make men feel comfortable and putting the foot in the door. Because I still think you go to a GP clinic, majority, you've got Women's Weekly, boom, right in the bloody magazine. You've got pregnancy posters. You've got, it's not very comfortable for men. And I've been, the amount of times I've been to a doctor sitting in my army uniform, which is typically quite a masculine, blokey type profession, I do feel uncomfortable. I'm kind of sitting there and there's, yeah, women's magazines and the women all around and the women posters, and it doesn't feel like it's comfortable or inviting for males. And I think there lies an issue in itself. But that's my kind of key thing I'm pushing at the moment for men is, even if you're listening to this and there's one person listening to this, I want you to ask that rhetorical question of, when did you last see your GP? And if you are thinking that right now and you can't even remember when you saw your GP last, use this as a prompter, use the month of November, whatever it might be, but use this as a prompt to go find a GP, book in for an annual checkup, and I can guarantee it, you'll leave that GP appointment feeling fantastic. You'll be like, how fucking good's that? I've just had a big annual checkup. Like you said, Gary, like you've just serviced your car. Like how good's that? Big tick in the box. So anyway,
you made one other really, really, really important point there as well, that it's like anything in life, you're going to get a bad one every now and again, but don't let that deter you. We had Mary Huang, who has her own psychology practice, and they're really amazing in terms of you can actually pick who you want to see, and they tell you all about the practitioner so you can get an insight into them. And then even if they still don't work, you can always just swap them and get a new one, which is fantastic. But you are going to get bad GPs, as you say. Don't let that deter you. Just try another one, you know?
Yeah, no, exactly. And I think that's one of the things I'm working at the moment with 25 Stay Alive, which is kind of my sort of social enterprise / community, is I'm actually got an appointment later this afternoon, online meeting this afternoon with community GPs, and finding GPs. We're going to sample it in Adelaide first, but finding GPs who are going to sort of collaborate with me and supportive of what I'm trying to do. And I'm actually developing with these GPs a 5-point checklist for men to take to their GP, which is very simplistic. It's not meant to be daunting, because I often get the whole, it's all good and well to book into a GP, but like, what do I ask for? And sometimes, yeah, like you said, some GPs can be better than others. So if we've got a partnership or a collaboration with a group of GPs who are supportive, we've got a little checklist for men to take there. How good is that? A man can just go like he would to a car service, get their GP, tick off the little checklist, and happy days.
How's the wheels? What's the steering like? Yeah, it's all right.
Exactly. So I think it's, yeah, that's one area I think we just need to continually improve on. There are so many of these amazing initiatives and charities and non-for-profits in the men's health space, which is fantastic. And I think there are so many great initiatives in generating conversations and support networks. But a lot is also the crisis, the pointy end, which is important. But I think if we focus more on the prevention of thousands as opposed to the crisis of hundreds, we're not going to get to the crisis mode in the large part. So I think if we can focus more on that, and I think large part by having annual checkups at the GP, even when you feel completely healthy and fine, you know, that might help solve that.
Yeah, because it can't be No, I was going to just finish that off, because one of the questions we had was around cost. We were like, is that a prohibitive factor to people going out? But I think you've already answered that. And it couldn't be, right? Because here in Australia, you can literally bulk bill. You can walk in off the street and see a doctor without even an appointment. I went up to Bondi 7-day center yesterday, met someone within 10 minutes. And so, you know, cost surely isn't a factor, is it?
I mean, you pay $15 for a pint in Sydney. You can go to the doctor. Mate, I can't go to the doctor this week. I need to buy a round for the boys. I mean, like, you can go to doctors. It's
it's free. Even it's that, free.
For me, and I know, but not, but some situations aren't free. So a big thing, obviously, for me is that I think nutrition's huge. So obviously it is huge, but I'm a big advocate of people just saying, just go and see a proper dietitian, even just once. You could get knowledge. It will last you for the rest of your life. Literally figure out what's good for you and for the rest of your life. And I was like, every time I bring it up, like, it's expensive though. I'm like, you're going to spend probably 25 hours on Google and on Instagram accounts giving you a lot of shite, and then trying something, not trying it. And then for all you know, you've got all these little issues coming up in your body, or will it be even just from an aesthetic standpoint, that's affecting your mental health, it's affecting how you feel, et cetera, et cetera. I'm like, it's $100. Like, you're going to pay $100 in the puggies, like something stupid.
And to go back to your car analogy, Gary, and I love that when people talk about the money, but I guarantee those same blokes who talk about the money, if they've got a bike or a car, or, you know, having the little service or tune-ups like you talk about, they're not mechanics, right? So they're not going to all of a sudden start to just service the car themselves because they know what they're going to do. They'll take it to a mechanic and they'll pay the $400, whatever it is. It's just what you do. You know, it's just what you do. But when it comes to their own health and their own bodies, I think men think they can just do it themselves. So they think, I don't need a nutritionist to tell me what to do, or a doctor, you know, no different to try and servicing your car. If you're not a mechanic, they try and service their own body, and there lies a few of the issues. But the other thing I always get with psychologists, people go, oh, psychologists are so expensive. But at the same time, we talk about seeing those GPs, and part of this checklist I'm talking about is a mental health plan. But people don't even realise that a GP can provide a referral to see a psychologist for up to 6 sessions. So there are 6 sessions which can be rebated, and then you can then have another 4 on top of that if you require it. So straight away, there are 10 sessions you can have annually as a starting point, which are covered by Medicare, which are free, and you can get them through your GP. So if you go see your GP and you're, you know what, I've really been struggling and I've had a lot going on, I've recently lost my job and I've done this and I've done that, they can provide 6 sessions, then you can get reviewed and get another 4. So straight away, you're getting into that mindset, you're looking after your mental health, you're having those conversations, and it's not going to be costing you $200-$300 a session at the start. So there are things that people might not even be aware of, but I think it's important that we get out of that concept and that mindset of it all costs money, I can't afford it. But like you said, you'll go to the pub and spend $15 on a beer without even blinking. So get out of that mindset.
And also, if you do have private health, like even if you want to go more frequently than those 10 sessions, as you said, Hugo, you can always use your private health, which I have psychology on my private health, and you get up to close to 50% back. So you can still get reduced rates in between others if you feel like you need to do them more frequently. So yeah, there are other things you can do to support that. And what about so let's say fast forward to 2021 now, you're in remission again. Like, how is your mental health right now today?
Yeah, look, it is good. So I'm in remission. So I suppose the back end of that whole cancer story, I last year had hopefully my final abdominal surgery. So essentially what happened is it got to the stage, they said, look, that the cancer is going to spread. We've tried everything we can, but unfortunately we have to remove your bowel. And that was a difficult decision to take on board, because now for the rest of my life, I'm going to have issues. I go to the toilet probably 10 to 12 times a day. Last night I was up probably 4 times throughout the night going to the bathroom. It's not ideal. It definitely isn't ideal. It has its own issues. And that's purely because I don't have a large bowel, or a rectum. So basically all I've got is a bit of my small bowel left, which they've stretched down and they've created like a J shape. So it's called a J pouch, and they staple it on itself. And the bottom of that small bowel, they stitch it onto your anus. And that part of my small bowel acts as my small bowel, large bowel, rectum all in one. So it's the size of like a fist, as opposed to some people have 6 meters of bowel. So it's naturally going to have complications, but I look at it also as being pretty remarkable that human body can still do that. And I can still live a pretty normal life. So I did have a stoma, which is an external bag, for about a year. And look, once again, that had its issues, but I got pretty used to that. That's, you literally go to the bathroom through your small bowel sticking out of your stomach, and you have to do bag changes every day. But I got pretty used to that. But then they gave me the option to say, look, we can create an internal pouch if you want it. And I thought, well, let's give it a crack. So after a couple of years of surgeries and emergency procedures and being pretty crook for a while, as you can imagine, I eventually kind of got through it all. And as I sit here today, I am cancer free. There's always going to be a very small chance of a relapse, but because I physically don't have a large bowel rectum, the chance of a relapse for bowel cancer is very, very, very small. It can technically relapse my small bowel, but that's almost non-existent. So I think in a way, I don't necessarily live with that anxiety that I would have lived with if I didn't have that massive surgery. And I would have literally had to have 3-monthly, 6-monthly colonoscopies, knowing that one day the cancer will probably come back. So I think I removed that level of anxiety, which I'm content and happy with the decision I made. That being said, naturally with all my other health stuff that I have to experience every day, that does impact my mental health. I do have some days where I do let it get to me a bit, and I do get pretty frustrated. But that's where I just have come better at managing my mental health. And Gary talked about how you're pretty good at having your own tools that you've learned that really help for you. And I think that's the biggest one over the years. It's finding what helped me. And I'd try all these different other things which people would kind of recommend that might not have worked. But then as soon as I found some stuff that worked for me, I thought, oh, yep, that's really helpful. So I've got a psychologist appointment at 1 o'clock this afternoon with Luke telehealth appointment. I probably speak to Luke every 3 to 4 weeks. And, you know, although I'm in a pretty good place, I also know that I have to keep consistent with it, which you can probably relate to, Neil, if you're still seeing a psychologist, is keeping consistent with it and knowing that it can take time. And you're going to have some days where you feel like you've just lost all your progress and you're thinking, fuck me, I'm having a really bad day. But then for me, I know that the better days are definitely coming, and those bad days don't last as long and they're not as often. So, you know, I'm in a pretty good way, both mentally and physically, albeit like everyone, you're still going to have your challenges.
Yeah. But the psychologist that I saw the first time, well, after a few sessions, I was like, so, you know, how long do you reckon I'll be here before I'm like cured? That's how my practical brain was. He goes, mate, you could be here for years.
But you're spot on. There's that mentality of men, especially, where it's always that quick fix. I want it now. You know, let's do it. And unfortunately, you're not going to have 2-3 appointments and just be, you know, you said, cured. It can be an ongoing bloody process.
That's pretty much me. That's everything. Even in my space, like football season's coming up, pre-season. Like, I've not been training the last 6 months due to lockdown. How long do you think this will take me to get fit? It's like, mate, we've not trained in 6 months. You can't just go Tonto and in 2 weeks that's you fit as a fiddle. It's like, you need to take time, mate. That's just what it's going to be. Don't worry, I'll do a 20-day challenge. And they're like, all right, okay, do a 20-day challenge, mate, and I'll see you in 8 weeks at the physio.
You know, in America, they have like the 7-second abs. Then it was the 6-second abs. Then it was the 5-second abs.
We all want the quick fix, right? We all want the shortest way to achieve something. And I think, when it comes to your mental health, and especially if you have vulnerable mental health or poor mental health, you don't want to cut corners with it. I think that's the biggest one. You got to trust the process. You got to trust the process. And I think as soon as you trust the process and you can start seeing some light at the end of the tunnel, you can start to see improvement. That's when you can start to go, okay, it actually does work. But you just got to give it time.
What about you, Sally? Do I do the quick fire questions with Hugo?
Yeah, sure. So Hugo, we ask all the guests kind of like the same 4 questions. So the idea is like we have an imaginary clock and then, you know, you just try and, you know, spit them out as quickly as you can. So here we go. So when are you at your happiest?
So for me, it would be, I've probably even heard a couple of dogs barking throughout this podcast, but I'd be taking my dogs for a walk to Queen's Park and just throwing the ball, playing with my dogs. And typically I'll leave my phone at home, and it's just kind of having that little half an hour to an hour every morning, that same routine, being with my dogs out in the open.
Cool.
Oh, brilliant. And in terms of the world, where do you think we are out of 10 in terms of mental health awareness right now?
For men? Or in general?
Oh, for the world, so like as a general society.
Look, I think we're coming a long way. Still a long way to go. I'll probably say a bit of a 6.5-7 out of 10 range. I think we're doing a lot of things well. We are doing a lot of things well. And I think it has changed a lot. But I still think we've got to continue with the momentum, and there's still a bit to go.
Awesome. And then in your own personal story, where are you out of 10 with your own mental health right now?
Look, I think right now I'm probably at about an 8, which for me is pretty bloody good. I think it's be pretty hard to ever be at a 10. I think if you're at a 10, that'd be pretty difficult. But for me, I'm at an 8, which I think is quite good. And I'd like to just hover around the 9, which would be nice. A little bit of a way to go.
Awesome. And if you could recommend one thing for people to do each day to improve their mental health, what would that be?
I think one thing would be to lower your expectations and have small, achievable goals each day. And that could be something as small as, you know, making your warm, bloody lemon water, having a little cup of tea, cup of coffee, you know, sitting on your little balcony for 10 minutes each morning, but just have very small, achievable goals in the morning. So I'm not saying, you know, necessarily run 10 kilometers, because the power of ticking off little checklists or little goals in the morning for your mental health, it's almost like these, you know, endorphins that kind of go off when you just feel like you've already accomplished something. So it's each morning, have a couple achievable goals you can set yourself that you can do that you know you can do. So it's not like, because if you can't do it, then you'll start to beat yourself up and you'll say, fuck, I didn't go for my 5K run this morning. And then that would be actually counterproductive to your mental health. So it's finding a couple of things you know you can do that's achievable, but you're still setting yourself some good habits, a bit of routine, and that's bloody good for your mental health.
Great. That's brilliant. And can you tell us, maybe just to finish off, Gary, what you reckon? Like, just, I know you've got a podcast, you've got 25 Staying Alive. Like, what's happening with Hugo right now?
Yeah, look, so months of November, I'm not sure when this will actually get released, but November is a big part of what I do in the men's health space. I do a podcast for November called Behind the Uniform. And basically it's just getting behind, you know, the facade of a mask, a uniform, whatever that might be, and just talk openly and honestly about, you know, how you're feeling. So much of what you guys are doing, a bit of a hobby, bit of a side project, but my kind of big passions outside of the army, being my full-time job, is 25 Stay Alive. And that is at the moment where I'm really trying to work hard in collaborating with GPs and getting young men especially to build that relationship with their GPs, having their annual checkups. And that's a big goal at the moment. That's hopefully sort of long-term. The idea is that when you turn 25, no different than when you turn 50 and you get your bowel cancer screening kits and your mammograms and all this shit when you turn 50 and everyone thinks, you know, that's when I'm going to take my health seriously. When you turn 25, you get a letter from Medicare. We'll cover your initial consultation with your GP. It will have a list of local GPs in your area based off postcode. So you can kind of pick the GP that's right for you. You have your little checklist that you can take to your GP, and then boom, you're big tick in the box. That's kind of initial discussions with Medicare at the moment that I'm going to try and hopefully get off, get out there. But anyway, that's long-term goals, but that's what I'm up to at the moment.
That's superb, mate.
Wow, that would be unreal if you did that. Imagine.
And that's proper impact, mate. It'd be brilliant. Yeah, mate, cool. So where can people find you, mate? Obviously, you've got Instagram, you've got your website.
Anything? Yeah, look, honestly, probably Instagram. Now, Hugo Tuvey. You know, I'm pretty bloody, I guess, open in terms of chatting to people. I'll never not chat to someone, as if someone takes the time to share their story and, you know, open up to me. I think the least that I can do, or we as a society can do, is get back to these people and just talk to them, because I'm a big one for connection. So, yeah, Instagram is probably the best one. And, yeah, if you want to reach out and just have a bit of a yarn, feel free.
And you're based in Sydney, aren't you? You mentioned Queen's Park, so you're probably in between Gary and I. Sydney is your home, your base?
Yeah, look, Sydney at the moment for work, and I'll probably be here for the next at least 3 years. So happy in Sydney, especially when we can actually explore and go out and about and catch up with people again, a bit of the normal life. So Queen's Park or Rose Bay Dog Beach, they're my two little spots. I kind of either on the stand-up paddleboard or in the water with the dogs. I love that. I think there's nothing better for your mental health as well. So maybe one day we can, if you guys like dogs or you like just going for a walk, a yarn and a coffee, we'll have to catch up.
Oh, definitely. I love dogs. Big dog fan.
Do you like dogs? Do you like dogs, Gary? Or even the Charing Cross. Is that your local pub near you there?
Yeah, no, we have been back since a couple of times since lockdown. I do like the Charing Cross. They do a really good Sunday roast. If you like a roast, and there seems to be a lot of blokes from the UK or Ireland, and they have their beers and their roast, and you know, it's live music and it's a bit of fun. So maybe we can even catch you there one day for a bloody pint of beer.
it goes off there. I went there. I did the Sunday roast one time. Then this guy got on a piano, and I was like, "What the hell's going on here?" And he was doing Elton John numbers, and here was I eating a Yorkshire pudding, going, "This is just mad."
Yeah, it goes off. It goes off. It's a good spot, and it's good seeing everyone out and about again, just having a good time and having a bit of freedom.
Yeah. And maybe just to close off as well, I know you've already mentioned it, but one of our questions was, if you did have any advice to anybody listening as maybe a final message, what would that be?
Look, I'm just going to reinforce it, because I think reinforcing messages can be quite good. The biggest one would be, is if you're listening to this right now, regardless of how you feel, obviously, if you are having a few issues, whether mentally, physically, or whatever, that's self-explanatory. Please go seek the professional medical support you need. But I'm just talking about if you're the average guy listening to this, and asking yourself the question, when was it last I saw my GP? And you just got to be honest with yourself, and then don't find excuses like we keep talking about, money or you're too busy or whatever. Pick up your phone, find a GP close to you, and just book in to see your GP, because all you're doing is you're putting the foot in the door, you're starting the conversations, and you're setting yourself up for success either now or later on in life. So I think that's probably the biggest takeaway. I'd love guys or girls listening to this podcast is to just initiate that conversation, reach out to a GP, and start having those annual checkups.
Brilliant. Well said.
Mate, thanks very much for your time. And mate, again, credit to you, mate. Absolute legend, very inspirational. And thanks for sharing your story, mate. Absolute quality. And I'm definitely going to book an appointment with my GP in the next couple of weeks, mate.
No, I love it. Love it. You got to start somewhere. And it's easy to come up with excuses. I've been there. I've done that. And you go, it's approaching the end of the year and the Christmas parties and this and that and the other. But I find if you just book it in and it's in your diary, it's in your calendar, you'll find that the bloody process is pretty easy. It's not that daunting. It's not that complicated.
I've only had a checklist, mate.
Sorry?
I wish I had a checklist to go on with.
I know. Well, I'm still developing it. But even just going in and saying, look, haven't seen a GP for a couple of years. I'd love an annual checkup. Yeah. You know, good GPs will typically ask the questions on how you're going, blah, 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 blah. You know, that's the important stuff.
I was going to say, and do that rather than Googling it, because
yeah.
I just had a son. I've been Googling things. Why is his legs crossed? And it tells you all kinds of things. And I'm just like, oh my God, seems like stop. Please. Googling.
I agree. Google can be, look, the digital age, it can be pretty powerful, you know, connecting to people online. And I think that can be really important, but spot on. Like, don't Google things and take Google for an answer, because you know, nothing's better than that human interaction, especially with a professional and your GP. So love chatting to you, Neil. Gary, it's been a pleasure. Looking forward to maybe one day catching up for a Yorkshire pudding at the Charing Cross or a walk along the Queen's Park with a couple of dogs. But sounds good.
Awesome.
Totally, mate. Thanks very much, mate, for your time. Cheers.
Thanks, Hugo. See you, mate.
Cheers, gents. Cheers.
Okay, bye.
Don't forget to follow us on all the social media channels, including Instagram and Twitter, @theselandsaremental. And if you do have a topic or a guest or subject that you want us to talk about, please do get in touch and send in your suggestions. Thanks for joining us on today's show. As mentioned at the beginning, if you are struggling with mental health, please do seek further assistance. Here's who you can get support from: Lifeline, Beyond Blue, Bitsear, and the Black Dog Institute.